Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then we consider what you know of the news of the day. The COVID-19 immunization plan will begin on Wednesday. That's 2 days earlier than initially scheduled, with Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin and Health Director General Dr. Nur Hisham Abdullah to receive their first jabs in 2 days. Now, will it all go according to plan? Where are the potential pitfalls? Joining us on the show tonight, we have Datuk Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad. He's the former health minister and head of the Selangor Task Force for COVID-19, also chairperson for the Pakatan Harapan Immunization Task Force. Good evening, Dr. Zul. Good to have you here.
Good evening, Melissa. Thanks for having me again.
Yes. Okay. So last week, when the National Vaccine Handbook was released, one of the things that was identified, Dr. Zul, was the fact that what seemed to be missing within this handbook was the clearly defined interaction between MOH, between the Ministry of Health and MOSTI, the Ministry of Science, Technology and Innovation. And I'm wondering whether you are concerned about or you can foresee overlap or potential problems in terms of communication in having two coordinating ministries without clearly defined roles.
Well, Melissa, I must say in no uncertain term that the idea of whole of government would be, you know, the way forward. But however, the whole of government's approach, as advocated by WHO, does not at all, you know, imply that such a confusion that has cropped up now in Malaysia is the way to go, right? I must say, you know, with all due respect, that an integral part of public health is the need for an effective risk communication strategy. Yeah, and thank God, alhamdulillah, we have seen, we have witnessed the successful delivery of the first, consignment of about 300 over 1,000 doses, you know, from Belgium that arrived yesterday. However, beyond that, you know, what is to me a bit more anxious and I'm concerned about is the, you know, this coordinating thing, you know. Apparently, MOSTI is coordinating the vaccine purchase and procurement, while the MOH is focused on vaccine implementation, you know, jabbing it to the arms, you know, of our citizenry. And it seems, you know, with all due respect, you know, admittedly, there's a bit of a too many chefs or cooks in the kitchen, it looked like. But, you know, but let me say this, right? The creation of a vaccine minister actually, admittedly and arguably perhaps, it has complicated the issue, you know? Because functionally and organizationally, immunization has always been the domain of MOH, you know? Not any other ministries, though. You know, they have been doing this, you know, from ages. They have been doing it from the NIPs from the 1950s, right? But somehow the PM may not be quite properly advised on this. I'm not saying he's fully advised, but there seems to be something that must be desired in this. You know, I would have
Dr. Zul. I mean, let me just ask you this. I mean, just to follow on to this, the question of why there's a need for, as it were, two ministries. And in fact, in our interview with Khairi Jamaluddin, the MOSTI minister, he said that they would divide the work. They would both jointly do the communications, but they would each have their part. Perhaps the solution is really much less about operations than to set priorities and principles. So there seemed to be some confusion about that dimension. Well, how do you see that?
That's a good question, because that, well, it's well, all well intended, but you could already see those, you know, a kind of a conflict in communication by way of details, you know, and that's where I'm coming from, you know. So ideally, I would have thought that it would have been, you know, a lot better off. It would have, you know, I would have designated this task to the public health division of MOH, you know, which would be the central coordinating agencies, though, you know, that would oversee the entire work from process of procurement right to its injection into the, you know, to the diaphragm or the upper arms of our vaccinees, right? But be that as it may, it has been, you know, arranged that way, because we must, you know, we must recognize that it, MOH has the technical know-how, the skills, the experience and wisdom, whatever, since handling the national immunization program from the 1950s, though. Yeah, so perhaps mostly the new kid on the block, you know, with all due respect, and I could see that Minister KJ is doing, you know, his level best. But the reason why you are seeing this a bit of, you know, conflict in communication, as I've stated, it's so very important to have effective, you know, communication and risk communication strategy. And hence, you know, the reason why you are saying this, Sharad.
Can I ask you, Dr. Zhou, what are the drawbacks? So having, you know, you say, you know, there's risk in miscommunication, but what does that entail? What does miscommunication reflect to the public already struggling with vaccine confidence and lack of transparency and detail when it comes to the national vaccine rollout?
You have said it all, but let me just give you an example, to just cite an example. When Minister KJ make a mention, he was quoted, you know, he was said to have, you know, a mention of 75,000 doses per day, while our Minister of Health allegedly said to have quoted 126,000 doses per day, almost like twice the amount said by or quoted by KJ. So, whom do you really want to believe, and what really would be the, you know, the end of the day? What will really matter? You know, so. And this is in all fairness, utterly confusing, both to the vaccinators, you know, on the ground, and to the general public. You can't say it otherwise. So, because, you know, since the stewardship of the national COVID-19 program is shared between two ministries with two heads, you know, due respect, we hope that they can speak to one another and get your action in tandem more, and then they sort out, you know, a communication uniformly, as to avoid all this confusing, you know, messages to the public.
Okay. Dr. Zhou, can I just ask you? I mean, I understand that having two heads is going to be difficult in any organization or in any project, but recently, you urged for Director General Hisham, DG Hisham, to not allow for political interference or for politicians to dictate pandemic management. And this was because I believe there was a recent announcement by Adam Baba exempting the cabinet from the 10-day quarantine rule from overseas assignments. And you issued a reminder not to let there be any political interference. Is that the case then? Could we see just having a civil servant, you know, the Director General of Health is a civil servant, there might be issues of political interference, and that's why there is a minister with a, you know, political influence to manage the pandemic
Right. Minister, may I say this, that, you know, putting myself in their shoes right now, 1 year ago, I was there almost 24th of February. I must say that I must qualify what I have said. You know, when I said that to DG, it was really meant where action and policies must be strongly premised on evidence and on science. You know, I told him not to be, you know, pushed around or bullied by the political, you know, leaders. So that's what I meant, you know, to mean, you know, you know, very, very qualified though, yeah. But at the end of the day, I must say that the minister, you know, whether MOSTI or MOH, must take all responsibility, you know, for their action, and that, and then the buck stops at them, you know, so to say. So yes, there must be, you know, a kind of check and balance. And I meant what I said at that point, Melissa, because that was a 3 days quarantine, which is against science. That was, you know, what I meant particularly. Right. I qualify myself.
Doctor, one of the other issues, of course, is the issue of who constitutes a frontliner. And there's some, again, you know, we've already got some of the numbers out of those who have applied among the frontliners and the definition of what frontliners. There are groups that are saying, why aren't hospital janitorial staff, why aren't security guards, you know, in that group? Do you think we'll just continue to have these conflicts about who is in a frontliner? Because at the end of the day, it's a question of limited vaccines.
Therefore,
who should get it?
Very true, Sharad. There is always this when the resources are scarce that you have to strategize. You've got to have prioritization kind of plan. With all due respect, frontliners, beside the HCW or the healthcare workers, you know, the paramedics and others, would of course be those who are literally and physically in the front line, you know, whether they are the paramedics, of course the paramedics are included, you know, whether they are, for that matter, the ATM, the PDRM, the, you know, and as well the others, you know. And in fact, I would say that sometimes, you know, cleaners themselves, if you understand super spreaders, individuals and event, a cleaner as naive as innocuous as he or she could be in that setup could very well be a super spreader because she moves around. So Sharad, you got to understand the signs of it, you know, the sign of super spreading and what is known as the dispersion value more than just the R0 value, as I've talked a lot earlier. So super spreading events and individuals must be identified, and that's how I think a function of what you call as frontliners,
right,
is to understand that.
Dr. Zoll, are politicians considered super spreaders? Should they be given priority? I mean, we know the Prime Minister is going to be the first to receive the jab. In New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern is saying that she does not need to be the first to receive the jab. Yeah. Where do you stand on this?
I think there is a context to this. Yeah, politicians can be super spreaders if they are involved in such super spreading event like a by-election or even a general election, Malaysia. Yeah, and you have seen that. I don't have to. It's so illustrative, overwhelmingly, you know, or clear in the case of Sabah state election. Yeah, so I don't think I need to go into that. But more importantly, if our Prime Minister would want to take it on himself to be the first, it's quite different from the New Zealand Jacinda's position, because you know here perhaps we are also faced with another context, which is, of course, the vaccine hesitant, if not outrightly anti-vaxxers, yeah? So perhaps him taking it first would somehow, you know, be the shot in the arm, in a figurative language, for others to believe that, well, if the Prime Minister is willing to do it, you know, this why not us and why not me, right?
Right.
So this is, I think there is a context to this. So, you know, but of course, politicians, again, I must say, if politicians are involved in those events that have, you know, exposed themselves, or then they could be considered. They could be considered over this, but as you know very well, Parliament is suspended, and how do we get to this? Perhaps it's a chicken and egg. If we get to be immunized, we can go, you know, we can have open up, you know, and have good debates in the Parliament, because that would be the most pertinent thing, most demanding thing right now.
That's a great argument to get our politicians vaccinated. Dr. Zoll, we're going to take a quick break, but let's come back and continue this conversation. You brought up issues of vaccine hesitancy and building that confidence, and we're going to come back and discuss all of that. So make sure you stay tuned to Consider This. We'll be right back.